This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over Elf. Ooh. And Tamara's very excited about it. Yay! But if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
But really, have you been living under a rock? Come on. It's Elf.
Are you ready for One Dry Kiss?
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one. It's Christmas movie in December. Woo! No need to have anything clever to say, because it's December, and it's Christmas, and it's Christmas, and it's Christmas. I am here.
And if you can't tell, Corinne is not excited about it at all.
We're doing the movie Elf, and I am here with... I was going to say with the elf that is definitely not on my shelf, Miss Tamara Kosian.
I was going to say with the elf that is on my shelf, or rather the Corinne who's on my bin. Corinne Edding. Nice. Corinne Edding, who's in my bedding.
That sounds a little sexier than perhaps we want.
That's okay. It's Christmas. Anything goes.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that I'm in the bedding with you, which maybe I have like Corinne face shapes on my.
Did you find out what I'm giving you for Christmas? Jeez.
Oh, yes. The package arrived a few days ago and I already opened it. I am recording, I have to say, too, that from Larry's house, and he lives really, really close to Disneyland, so you can hear the fireworks because they always go off at 9:30. So yeah. If you hear blasts in the back, I am not in a war zone. I am near the happiest place on Earth.
Can you see the fireworks, or do you just hear them?
Yes. If you go out his front door and kind of like down his front yard area, you can see them a little bit off in the distance. There's quite a few trees and buildings in the way.
Oh.
So they kind of get cut off, but yeah.
Okay, well, why doesn't Larry live in a penthouse so you don't have that problem? That is my question.
I'll make sure I ask him that when I go back
do.
Out there.
Please do.
When Corinne demands dancing when you have to go to the restroom and walk behind me while we're recording, and that we live in a penthouse so I can see the fireworks better.
Yeah. Yeah. Please. You know, my demands are just small and very reasonable.
She is not at all like a third person in this relationship.
Look, just because I also sent Larry sheets with my face on them doesn't mean that there's anything awkward going on, okay?
I just cannot imagine him sitting on your face. It's just...
I just want him to feel like, you know, my warm embrace. My gentle, loving stare. That's what the sheets look like.
I know. I expected the sheets, like, what expression would Corinne have on sheets that she would give to somebody else? And I just pick, that beloved noise that you made up so many weeks ago.
No.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. The edding on my bedding. Yeah. I love it.
Now, Tamara, I noticed on the outline that you so lovingly crafted that you put, Tamara, do the, although I usually cuss when I do it, do the outline already in all caps. Was that effective for you?
Do you mean do the synopsis
already? Do the synopsis already. Sorry, yeah.
I'm much gentler with myself than you are, Corinne. I don't curse at myself. I'm showing some self-love. G-rating my conversations I have with me, keeping out the curse words. But yes, no, I did do a synopsis. Thank you for asking. Would you like to hear it?
I would love to hear it.
Okay.
Hopefully it's filled with whimsy and Christmas magic. No pressure.
'Twas the night of Christmas, 30 years or so ago. A baby boy sneaks out of his crib at the orphanage he's being raised at in pursuit of a stuffed bear. But it just so happens this bear is in Santa's sack. And he unknowingly scoops him up and takes him back to the North Pole. The elves keep him, name him Buddy, and raise him as their own. Buddy, played by Will Ferrell, happily resides up there for years until he overhears that he's a human. Santa confirms and tells Buddy where he can find his father in New York and also on the naughty list. Double.
Not the naughty list!
Buddy travels the great distance to find his family and learn what it's like to be a festively spirited wannabe elf in the real world. It's not easy, but he manages to keep his cheerful demeanor and childlike innocence until he meets a girl named Jovi, played by Zooey Deschanel. Together, they learn about the Christmas spirit and try to spread it before it's too late. What do I mean, too late? Keep your volume turned north and find out with us as we recap the hilarious movie Elf.
Keep your volume turned north? You did put whimsy and Christmas magic into your synopsis.
Thank you. Ugh, thank you.
That was beautiful.
It's just all from sleeping on your face, Corinne, that does it. You know, keeps me spirited and festive.
I'm an inspiration. I get it.
Corinne, would you like to get us started in this retelling of this wonderful holiday classic?
Why, yes, I would. Elf.
Oh, I see you have your nails painted, too. I didn't even say anything about that earlier.
Yeah,
all.
They're sparkly and purpley.
I can't. They're purple. I can definitely see the purple.
Yes.
And you're flipping around your fingers, and it feels like I'm almost looking at Christmas lights. Ding, 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 ding.
I painted them in my car while I was waiting for traffic to move. It was very exciting.
Fucking shit. That sounds like some hellacious traffic because those nails look flawless. So you must have had a lot of time.
Yeah, you know, I left at 6:50 in the morning and I arrived at work at 7:15. No, excuse me, 8:15. There you go.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yep.
Remember those days.
And so typically it takes me between half an hour to 45 minutes, but the traffic was just really bad this morning. And then I had exciting battery things with my car that were so much fun that during my lunch hour, I left to get a new battery for said car. Yay! And new windshield wipers. Yay!
It's the gift that keeps on giving. Oh, wait, you used your boss's battery charger, the cute one that he got you?
Yes. It worked.
That's the gift that keeps on giving.
That is the gift that keeps on giving. I was almost tempted not to buy a battery because I'm like, I can just rent this out at any time. It'll be fine.
Just got to jump my car every day. It's totally doable. Not at all inconvenient.
Nah, it's fine. It's totally fine. But our friend Buddy the Elf does not have to worry about such things as cars because he is a very ambulatory elf. Probably those long, non-elf-like legs that he has.
He is tall. He is a tall man.
Yes. And I will tell you more about Buddy in our beautiful recap of the movie Elf. Ahem. Papa Elf, played by Bob Newhart, sits in a chair in his festive green elf attire and explains there's only three jobs elves can do. That's make shoes at night, baking cookies in trees, which, well, perhaps not the best idea, particularly during fire season. And then there's the big show, working in Santa's workshop.
Corinne is getting jiggy with it right now, as she...
It's exciting in Santa's workshop. No human has been in Santa's workshop until 30 years ago. And that's where our story starts. Roll those festive opening credits. Roll them! Festive opening credits rolled. After the cute credits, we are transported 30 years back in time to an orphanage where a nun sets a one-ish-year-old baby gently into a crib to sleep. The nun leaves, and shortly thereafter, Santa, played by Ed Asner, who died this year, I believe.
R.I.P. Ed.
Yeah. Comes down that chimney. No, he died in 2021. James Caan died
take it back.
In 2022.
Oh. R.I.P. James Caan.
Yeah. The nun leaves, and shortly thereafter, Santa, played by Ed Asner, who makes an excellent Santa,
comes down that chimney and munches on some cookies, not realizing that he's being watched by a tiny and very curious human. This tiny and very curious human is so curious that he escapes his crib and crawls right into Santa's sack, lured by the aforementioned teddy bear that Tamara spoke of in her synopsis. Her beautiful synopsis.
My beautiful synopsis that basically took over your whole first section. I apologize. I realize that right now because I wrote it after the fact.
It's fine. No, I mean, synopsis has to... to take up the beginning thing a lot of times. It's not a big deal. How many times did you accidentally write Satan instead of Santa is my question.
666 times.
Yeah. Oh, 666. Me too. What a coincidence. Maybe we should have done this movie as a Halloween movie.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So Santa finishes his deliveries and returns to the North Pole, where Santa and all the elves are celebrating. Another successful Christmas delivery run. Hark ye the bells, sweet herald bells, all here to sing. Ding, 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 dong. But then something catches Santa's eyes. His sack is wiggling. And we're not talking about his man parts. No, we're talking about... the Santa sack filled with gifts. Santa turns.
You ever see those like Chippendales things where they're like, the stripper that's dressed like Santa's going to come and unpackage his gift for you? And I'm like, I don't want to see Santa's unpackaged gift. That just seems dirty and not. No. Fireman, yes. Policeman, yes. Santa, no, thank you.
I know. Same. And the whole song, I saw mommy kissing Santa Claus. I'm like, no, no. No kissing going on here. Thank you. Yeah. I'm okay with no sexy Santa. Thank you very much.
I don't even think sexy and Santa should be included or allowed in the same sentence.
If Santa wants to deliver a sexy man to me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Just like Mariah Carey's, you know, I don't want a lot for Christmas. There's just one thing I need. She's talking about a sexy man, you know.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Santa turns to observe his sack of toys just in time to see a super cute baby crawl out of the sack of toys. An elf reads the baby's diaper. Little Buddy Diapers? So Ovs, his name is Buddy, right? Right? Right?
Thank God it wasn't Pampers.
Can you even imagine? Hey, Pampy! They all decide to keep Buddy, so Papa Elf narrates, Buddy stayed with an older elf who had always wanted kids but been too busy building toys to make that happen. It's me. I'm the elf. That's what Papa Elf basically says. So Papa Elf volunteers to raise Buddy, and we see a montage of Buddy growing up in the North Pole. And this movie is basically a series of montages, I realized. I was like,
it sure is.
I was like, oh, another montage. Oh, another. Okay. Oh, another. Oh, okay. More montages. Got it.
All successfully fueled by Will Ferrell's physical humor. All fueled by Will Ferrell's physical comedy.
Yes. So we see a montage of Buddy growing up in the North Pole and quickly outgrowing all the other elves. There are a few important things that happen during this montage. We find out the code of the elves. Dun, 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 dun. One, treat every day like Christmas. Two, there's room for everyone on the nice list. And three, the best way to spread Christmas cheer is singing loud for all to hear. Repeat after me. The best way to spread Christmas cheer is singing loud for all to hear.
Are you an elf, Corinne?
I was kind of wondering after watching this movie if I was an elf. I visited my aunt this weekend and she's like, you just sing all the time, don't you? I was like, yeah,
yes,
I kind of
yes,
do.
You do. You already twice and we're like, what, 5 minutes in? Oh, no, wait, you and then you sang us in. So that's 3 times in 5 minutes, a new record.
I said to her, you know, a requirement for any person who's going to be my partner is that they have to at least be okay with me singing all the time or enjoy it, one or the other. But just like it needs to either be a neutral thing
or a positive thing. And I said, when my sister moved in with me, I said, is it going to bother you that I sing all the time? And she's like, no, that's fine. The way that you do it is fine because I'm not like singing. I'm not putting on musical numbers. I'm just like singing under my breath most of the time.
I'm saying, Bridget, stop watching that show. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Jazz hands.
And I've got a sports highlight for you to watch as well.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, my sweet baby Jesus. You want to see me twitch, don't you? Why?
We find out there's a shortage of Christmas spirit, which makes the sleigh fly. Which is Christmas spirit makes the sleigh fly, not shortages of Christmas spirit. Which is why Papa Elf has created the Kringle 3000, a 500 reindeer-powered jet turbine engine. This issue of Christmas spirit powering a sleigh is also addressed in the truly bizarre Christmas movie, The Christmas Chronicles. That's where Kurt Russell plays Santa and Goldie Hawn plays Mrs. Claus.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to watch that.
And there is a legit musical number in a bar with Santa singing blues, I think. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It is a very odd Christmas movie. It's kind of like a fever dream. So...
a glowing endorsement from Corinne.
Tamara's like, gotta look like, yeah, no, on her face.
Yeah, no. Yep. I have my favorites in circulation that I watch over and over again. This is one of them. I don't need to add a fever dream into the repartee.
I watched it for the first time last year and I was like, wow. So we find out that Buddy is shitty at building toys because he doesn't have the natural dexterity / nimbleness of elves. So he gets sent to quality control, opening jack-in-the-boxes instead. Yay! While doing this, Buddy is thrown into an existential crisis when he overhears two elves talking about how Buddy is actually human. He's 30 fucking years old, and up until that point, he had never realized it. And suddenly, is having a very large identity crisis, probably as large as his 6'3 height.
Yeah. Never realized that he was about the same size as three elves standing on each other's heads.
Yeah, like three or maybe even four. Yeah, ridiculous. Who is Buddy, even if he isn't an elf? ? He passes out onto a neighboring elf. And when he comes to, he races home. And Papa Elf comes clean about who his parents really are. His mom is dieted. She didn't just leave for cigarettes and not come back. And his dad lives in New York. But he never knew Buddy even existed. Papa Elf holds up a snow globe that shows a magical view of the New York City skyline with the Empire State Building prominently placed in the middle and snowflakes falling all around. And he says, your dad works in the Empire State Building. Buddy runs out of his home into his North Pole snow globe life and finally meets up with Leon, the cooler cousin of Frosty. Leon encourages him to go out and explore NYC. So Buddy decides to go and find out who he really is, and Santa gives him some advice. If you see gum on the street, don't eat it. It's not free candy. Does he take this advice? We will find out. And if you see a sign that says Peep Show, Buddy's face lights up, and Santa continues, that doesn't mean they're letting you look at Christmas presents early. Buddy's face falls, but he has no idea the disappointment he's in for when Santa says, and finally, I'm telling you because I think you should know in advance. Your dad, Walter Hobbs, or as I call him throughout the movie, dear old dad, is on the naughty list. Buddy looks like he's just found out he's human again. No! He exclaims in horror. But I mean, how bad could Walter Hobbs be, right?
Horrible. Humans are horrible creatures, and I do not fault Buddy for being traumatized, realizing he's one of us.
I kind of think you're pretty great.
Aw. It's because you're an elf and you don't know any better.
okay, I You may have a point there.
Then we cut to a New York fancy pants office in a high-rise building where we meet Buddy's dad, who's the chief editor of a book company. He is living his best naughty life by taking books back from a nun who runs an orphanage due to lack of payment and is unmoved when she pleads, "But the children love the books." Then we go back to the North Pole where Santa assures Buddy, although not really convincingly, that Walter can still find his way back on the nice list. Maybe all he needs is Christmas spirit. The elves cheer in agreement behind him before Papa Elf approaches and solemnly gives Buddy a snow globe of the Empire State Building and a hug, promising to always be there for him. I guess he gave him the snow globe earlier, but he was giving him the actual snow globe to travel, so he had reference points to know what the building looked like.
It's like a map, you know?
Of course, yeah. I just don't need directions to your house. Corinne, just give me a snow globe of your new place.
Great.
And I'll find you.
Perfect. Yeah. That's what, when you move into your penthouse, you just let me know. By snow globe.
Like, aren't you in Brentwood? No, I'm in Pasadena. Didn't you get my snow globe? Jesus Christ.
But where you live, it would be a smog globe. And where I live, it would be a fog globe.
Okay, you think you're so much better than me because you have fog and I have smog, whatever.
The whole thing is that it would look exactly the same. It'd be the same effect in the globe and it would be sparkly. So who the fuck cares?
I think my smog would be a little bit darker than your lovely white fluffy fog.
There'd still be sparkles. That's all that really matters. Sparkles! Sparkles! Christmas
Yay,
magic!
Brown sparkles. Isn't it beautiful? Shake, 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 shake. No, it's not.
No, not brown. It's going to be a nice smoky charcoal.
Quit trying to sell it to me, damn it. I live here. I know what it looks like. Anyways, Buddy takes the snow globe of the Empire State Building and marches outside into the North Pole cold. And was it just me, or were all those trees around him really teeny tiny? Were they elf trees? I couldn't figure it out.
I'm telling you, he lives in a snow globe.
I mean, okay, but even if you're the teeniest tiny creature in the world, like, your trees don't have to be teeny tiny like you. You know what I mean? There's not a bunch of ant-sized trees next to anthills. It just took me by surprise. There's some inexplicable things in this movie that I just wanted to point out, and that is one of them. Anywho.
You know what was an inexplicable thing to me? How Papa Elf lives in an off-white house, and all of the, like, interior structures are, like, off-white in Santa Land, and you would think it would be filled with, like, all these Christmassy colors or golds or something like that, but it was just like white. Everything is just drenched in white.
Maybe because they have to surround themselves with Christmas spirit when they're making the actual toys, that it's almost kind of like a soothing balm to their eyes.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I feel you.
A pool of zen amidst the fucking. But they have to deal with 17 hours a day.
Is that why you like the color camel so much? It's like a pool of zen.
If you like the color camel, what's the problem with the fucking smog snow globe, Tamara? It should be camel with sparkles.
Ta-da!
You like that, don't you?
It'll match all your outfits. It'll be perfect.
It's not the right kind of brown, okay?
You're so picky. You're like a graphic designer, and you're just like, ugh, such a design snob. Ill.
Thank you, Miss Elf. We see your Christmas cheers come early this year.
You know between the two of us that I'm the design snob, so.
Oh, fuck yeah, you are. We just went over your aunt's website. We just talked about your aunt's website before we even started this podcast.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Anyways. And so Buddy's out in the, amongst the teeny tiny trees. First thing I need to point out. The second thing I need to point out is that he gets on an iceberg to float to New York, but not before meeting three very cute claymation creatures. Just inexplicably, one of these things is doing its own thing. One of these things is one... No claymation creatures except for this point and Leon, the snowman.
And they were in the opening sequence as well.
Ah.
Yeah.
I thought that was just a cute opening sequence, but they're layered into the movie now.
They're
layered in. They're talking to real life Buddy.
Yeah, they got tinily layered in. Yeah.
So Buddy says goodbye to his claymation creature friends, a penguin, a walrus, and a tiny polar bear, who tell him goodbye and wish him luck finding his father. The walrus bursts into sad tears before another huge claymation narwhal pops out of the frigid water and says, "Bye, buddy. Hope you find your dad." But there is no claymation magic in the real world, and when Buddy is magically transported to what I'm guessing is New York State, he encounters a real-life raccoon. He tries to befriend it like his animal friends back home, but when he goes in for a hug, the raccoon goes in for the jugular and flies at Buddy's neck. I would be a bit worried that the raccoon has rabies because I'm guessing that's not normal, but I have not tried hugging too many raccoons, so I'm not entirely sure.
I kind of think that Buddy is magical because his elf outfit stays immaculate throughout the entire movie. He doesn't actually really seem to need to eat things, and he magically has money even though we never see it or see a place for it to be.
He had pockets in his elf uniform.
Okay. Oh, were you like, is that a pocket or are you just happy to see me, buddy?
Not sexualizing elves or Santa Corinne. Let's not do that.
But Buddy's human, so it's, you know, it works out.
Oh, yes, that's right. But we didn't know that at the beginning. Yes, I guess we do.
Oh my god. Okay. The fact that I'm an elf explains so many things because it's why like everybody who goes out with me wants to be my friend but doesn't want to bone me and like date me. Got it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe you gotta sing for him. Spread the Christmas cheer, Corinne.
Oh, spread
that Christmas
spread
cheer.
It. Ooh.
Spread it.
Excuse me for a second while I go sit in a beige room.
Because you have like Vegas lights lining your ceiling.
They're not Vegas lights. They're blue. They're tasteful.
Uh-huh.
It is a holiday. It kind of falls in line even though they're there all the time. Anyways, Buddy finally arrives to the big city of New York. And does a great job of blending in with the New York natives.
Oh.
And by good, by great, I mean terrible. He waves at people trying to hail cabs. He giggles hysterically when he gets a shoe shined. He takes every flyer handed to him, and then some. And even though Santa advised against it, he finds a stash of chewed up gum under a subway rail and quickly pulls each one off and chews it.
Oh.
Which is one of the most disturbing things I have seen in any of our movies up to this point. Worse than even the little monsters, and people had their face chewed off in that one.
You know, it wasn't that he took one piece of gum. It was that he went for like 5, 6 to 8 pieces of gum. I mean, he went whole gum hog.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I just don't even want to think where that gum came from.
Ugh.
Eventually, he makes it to the Empire State Building and in the elevator going up realizes all the buttons light up when pushed. He is intrigued and must push all the buttons. He must! Much to the chagrin of the fellow elevator rider. He makes it to his father's floor, eventually, and the 20 buttons above Buddy's floor still glow. The poor guy has a long ride and his expression reads, "Fuck my life," as the doors close, just in time to protect him from Buddy saying, "Oh, I forgot to give you a hug."
Okay. But once again, gentle listeners.
ODK tip.
You are
ODK
fucking
tips next on my list.
Oh, okay. Okay.
ODK pro tip. Get out of the elevator. I repeat, get out of the elevator.
Yes.
Get out of the elevator.
Get out of the elevator. Get out.
No sense going up?
Because it's going to go up very slowly. Or down very slowly.
No sense in going up. Get out and go back down. Go back down.
Because there's more than one elevator in the Empire State Building.
I would hope so.
Yes.
There's like fucking 50 floors. Like, you need to get to work. It's going to take as long as it took Corinne to get through that goddamn traffic to get to your floor if there's one elevator. I totally got that too when I saw that guy's expression. I'm like, oh, honey. You don't listen to our podcast. You should, though.
You should. Yes.
Your life would be all the richer for it, if not for anything but these next few moments on the elevator. And when Buddy gets to his father's floor, his father's in a meeting. One of his approved books was published without the last two pages. Walter Hobbs thinks it's fine. Kids are too stupid to notice, and it'll cost a bundle to fix, so let it ride. Buddy makes it to the reception area and talks to his dad's secretary, Deb, played by the great Amy Sedaris,
yay!
Who thinks because of his outfit, which is full elf regalia, is thrilled to see him and thinks he's a singing telegram.
Yay!
And I'm going to be honest, Corinne, I imagine this is how you'd greet a singing Christmas telegram that came into your office.
Okay.
Hi, who are you? Oh my God, you look so amazing.
Yes.
Are you an elf? Are you from the North Pole? Did Santa send you?
There's another scene where later Buddy goes into work with his dad, and I'm like, and he's like, you look great in this, and you, like to the different people as he goes by. And I was like, oh shit, that's me. Fuck. I compliment people all day long. Sincere compliments, today I spent like gushing over people's outfits at work.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go through the checklist, shall we? You like singing? Check. You are fucking merry as shit? Check. You compliment people constantly?
Yes.
Check, check. Mm-hmm. It's just getting more and more clear. Sorry to say.
Christmas spirit? Check, check, check.
Oh, God. Christmas spirit? Check, 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 check. Deb ushers Buddy unknowingly into his long-lost father's office, and Walter is being a very good sport about a full-grown man in an elf costume in his office. He asks Buddy if he's from the North Pole, and he is, he says excitedly. Santa must have told you I was coming. People start gathering in Walter's doorway, and he asks Buddy if he has a song to sing. Buddy doesn't, but he has so much goddamn holiday spirit that he belts out an impromptu ditty about Walter being his dad he never met. He was adopted and you didn't know I was born, and I love you, I love you, I love you. Walter is a little disturbed, but Buddy adds he's Susan Wells' orphan son. Walter, unnerved now, thinking he's getting blackmailed, calls security to escort Buddy out. And we next see him being thrown under the street by two beefy guards who yell, go back to Gimble's. What is Gimble's, you ask?
Ooh.
Well, it's just down the street and looks like Santa's Airbnb. It's a posh department store decked in all its halls. And I really want to go there, especially during Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, understandably, Buddy is drawn to it. He goes inside and is approached by a female fragrance employee who asks if he'd like to try some passion fruit spray. He says, sure, takes it from her and sprays it into his mouth. It's disgusting, but hopefully the alcohol and the perfume will steal his resolve when he meets his next big city challenge, the escalator.
Oh.
The next scene is hilarious, but he tries to ride the escalator while simultaneously being scared of it, which results in him doing the splits across four, maybe five stairs as he's carried up the lift, much to the annoyance of the other shoppers who have been pulled around waiting for him to move. He eventually passes a lingerie section where he sees a sign that says, for that special someone, next to a Santa-themed teddy. And wonders if this is the gift he can get to his father to accept him. He is the special someone Buddy wants in his life, after all.
And when she says teddy, she doesn't mean teddy bear, gentle listeners.
No, no. Lingerie. Lingerie.
Lingerie. Yes.
Lingerie. Unfortunately, his outfit gets the attention of a large, bald man with a name tag that says Wanda, who hurries over, grabs Buddy by the arm, and tells him he needs to shop on his break time. We realize Wanda thinks Buddy is a Gimble's North Pole employee, a.k.a. the toy section. And all the seasonal employees' uniforms look surprisingly like Buddy's normal garb. Fun fact, Wanda is played by the actor Faison Love, who's listed on IMDb as just Gimble's manager.
Yeah.
That's his character name. But the role was supposed to go to Wanda Sykes, who had a scheduling conflict, causing them to bring in Faison, who kills it, but as a little nod to Wanda, they keep her name on his employee name tag.
Oh.
So I don't think Faison identifies as she, but since he's not named in this role and his tag says it, I'm going to keep calling him Wanda.
Absolutely. But I do think that Wanda Sykes would have been incredible in this role.
Oh, yeah.
He's great.
Of course.
I thought he was one of the standout performances in this movie,
mm-hmm.
but Wanda Sykes mm-hmm. would have been like, oh, wow. Thank you for that
so
fun
perfect.
Fact. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I saw that little bit of trivia on the Netflix show Movies That Made Us.
Oh.
So, citing my sources. Wanda drags Buddy to the North Pole, quote unquote, and Buddy informs that this ain't the North Pole. It's festively impressive, but Buddy refuses to acknowledge that it's the real deal until Wanda announces Santa's coming the next day. Buddy screams, "Santa!" thoroughly believing it's his lifelong friend who's coming to town. The over-the-top enthusiasm makes Wanda look like he wants to slap the smile off Buddy's face, and he tells him to get back to work, which he intends on doing. He is an elf, after all, until a glow in the distance catches his eye. It's a fellow employee who just plugged in the lights on her tree. It's Jovi, played by the very blonde Zooey Deschanel. And Buddy is drawn to her like he's drawn to elevator buttons, Gimbel's department store, and pre-chewed gum. Because, you know, she's Zooey Deschanel.
Nice. I wonder where that name came from, Jovi.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting, too. Like, yeah. Maybe it was supposed to be like a edited jovial, like a jovial, shortened jovial.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
Like jovial and jolly together? No. Jovi.
And I had forgotten.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah. And I had forgotten that that Zooey Deschanel was ever blonde until I saw her. And I was like, oh my gosh.
She looks so much better as a brunette. Sorry, Zooey.
Yeah. Yeah.
You look so much better as a brunette and with banking bangs.
Yes. Oh, the bangs are everything.
Mm-hmm. Buddy stands beneath her, which is creepy stalker style, and she treats him accordingly. But he's Buddy the Elf, so he misreads the social cues and how inappropriate he's being, and instead tells her that she needs to sing, or I've just totally ad-libbed this and probably should have gone into more detail instead of the other things, but I didn't. He shows her how to sing in public, because apparently that's his version of courting. Until Wanda pops up behind the corner and informs him there's no singing in the North Pole. Which, why, Corinne? You being an elf should know the answer to this. Why is there no singing in Gimbel's North Pole?
Wanda is a lying liar pants. Wanda does not have the North Pole elf spirit. Wanda doesn't know.
Okay. Heard it here. Anyways, the shift eventually ends. Jovi leaves to go home, but Buddy stays because he has a lot of work to do to prepare for Santa's arrival and decorates the shit out of Gimbel's North Pole. There is a montage of him decorating. I don't know if you go into it, so I'll just say that.
I explain the look. I don't really go into montage.
Great.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's all we need.
Yeah.
It's montage of him decorating the shit out of Gimbel's.
Montage! Meanwhile, at Casa de Hobbs, Walter comes home to have dinner with his family. But does he? He says dismissively to his smoking wife, Emily, not smoking cigarettes, but she's a hottie. And she deserves better than him, played by Mary Steenburgen. He says, "I'm going to my room to eat. I've got a lot of stuff to do." Aw, nothing like the warm embrace of dad coming home after a long day of work.
Yeah. Grabbing his plate and whisking off to his office.
He grabs his plate off the table and goes to his office, just like Tamara said, looking up Susan Wells in an old yearbook. No, it's fine.
I've seen this movie a lot.
You're stealing my glory! How dare you! While his wife and 12-year-old son silently and forlornly eat at the table. Back at Gimbel's, Buddy has turned the place out. It is decorated to the nines for Santa. What was once a lightly seasonally decorated toy department store floor now looks like a winter wonderland with white paper chains, white paper snowflakes, and gold tinsel everywhere with beautiful Lego sculptures of the New York skyline and multiple light brights hanging above Santa's throne saying, "Welcome, Santa." Is there anything else about the decor that you would like to elaborate on?
I think he had a couple of Etch-a-Sketches that, like, portrayed the Mona Lisa or something.
Yeah, he had Etch-a-Sketched the Mona Lisa, and there was also, like, white cottony snow all around.
Yeah. White cottony batting stapled to every single surface that stayed still long enough for him to staple to it.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I like giving you Etch-a-Sketches, so that you just do the Mona Lisa, you know, real quick-like on the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But my Mona Lisa looks like a drunk stick figure, so there's that.
Yeah.
they really got a great Etch-a-Sketch artist for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Once Buddy is finished, he pauses, looking around satisfied at his creation, and then he hears, "My mother will start to worry. My father will be pacing the floor." He follows the singing to the employee bathroom, where Jovi is showering and singing, "Baby, It's Cold Outside." I might also mention, it is no longer night. It is early morning at Gimbel's. Buddy sits on the bathroom sink next to the shower and accompanies her quietly. She sings, "The neighbors might think," and he softly responds, "But baby, it's bad out there." She continues, "Hey, what's in this drink?" He continues, "No cabs to be had out there." They continue duetting until she and Buddy, who had previously been singing softly, belts along with her, "Baby, it's cold outside." Jovi's eyes flare open, all full of, "What the fuck?" She peers around the shower stall, seeing Buddy sitting there on the sink, and shrieks at him, "Get out! Get out of here!" He rushes out of the bathroom, and next time we see Buddy, it's the morning, and he's sleeping in the Gimbel's window, clutching a 2.5-foot animatronic elf in his arms. Buddy's dad passes by and does a double take. He stares at Buddy through the window, and Buddy, in the animal sense we have when people are staring at us, wakes up and sees dear old dad, and enthusiastically pounds on the glass. "Dad, hi, it's me." But dear old dad isn't ready for Buddy and moves on. Buddy tries sneaking back into the Empire State Building to drop off a gift for dear old dad, but a 6'4" man in an elf costume really stands out, and he's quickly escorted out by his two security guard friends.
Shocking.
I know. Buddy yells, "Here's a gift for my dad. Tell him I love him and I think he's the best dad in the whole world." But back at Gimbel's, Jovi, who is curling ribbon at a present wrapping station, calls Buddy over. What were you doing in the women's locker room this morning?" Buddy innocently replies, I heard you singing. You have the most beautiful voice I've ever heard." Jovi narrows her eyes at him. "Are you sure it wasn't so you could see me naked?" Buddy's eyes widen. "How would I know you're naked?" And I roll my eyes at Buddy. It's how one takes a shower. One takes a shower without their clothes on.
Maybe elves shower differently. We don't know, at least in the North Pole.
We saw him showering in a tiny shower, and he was at least naked from the tub up.
Okay. Well, we didn't say that in the outline, so our listeners don't know.
Oh, I mean, yes. I'm sure elves shower in bathing suits.
Got it.
Yes. I actually sometimes do initially shower in a bathing suit if I've been in a pool and I come out and I want to rinse off the suit. I start off in the suit, but then I strip that suit off and I get naked in the shower.
Fascinating.
I know. Tamara, I'm going to break it to you softly, gently. I am not a never nude.
Good to know. Mm-hmm. And I have seen you walk half naked in your apartment while I'm there. And I'm like, oh, hello.
I'm like, it's nothing she hasn't seen before. I'm not like, shiki, shiki, shiki.
Are you kidding? It's a flesh parade going on back there. Oh, there's Corinne in all her glory.
Glory.
Can I just say, and somebody correct me if this is accurate, please email us. Why in the hell would Gimbel's have a shower in the women's locker room? It is not a gym. Do people exert themselves? Do they get really sweaty in the toy department?
You know, didn't you have one when you worked at Marshall's?
I never worked at Marshall's.
Mervyn's? Excuse me, it starts with an M.
No. No, we didn't.
Oh, what about,
shockingly,
what about your healthcare system as per last holiday?
you know, your doctors that worked in the behind the scenes area in Mervyn's.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
I have been to and worked in offices that have had showers, but
why?
So that employees can shower.
I know, but like, what kind of work was it? I guess is my question.
Like, it was office. You know, it was like computer places, and you know, stuff like that. Wow. So like Symantec or Facebook, they'll have showers. You know, different places.
That's
like
because
that.
They want their employees to stay there forever and never go home.
Well, you know. Just because there's a nap room in one of those buildings with my name on it doesn't mean anything, okay?
Okay.
So Jovi and Buddy's conversation is cut short because Buddy sees Santa. A crowd of kids cheers for Santa and Buddy pushes in front of them all, cheering away. And then is super disappointed. That's not Santa. While fake Santa talks to the kid on his lap, Buddy hisses at the kid, "Don't tell him what you want. He's not Santa." Then he turns to fake Santa. "You smell like beef and cheese. You are not Santa." He rips off Santa's beard and triumphantly yells to the room full of kids, "He's a fake! Santa's a fake!" Tough Santa is not having it. He looks like Jim Belushi in a Santa outfit and he tackles Buddy. They get into a full-on brawl and we cut to dear old Dad who is opening the gift that Buddy gave him. What do you think was in that box?
A beef and cheese-shaped Santa.
Ooh. That's a good guess. But no. It's addressed in true stalker fashion to someone special. Mm. It has a handmade card with a picture of dear old Dad back in the day with Buddy's mom, Susan, and a hand-drawn picture of Buddy that looks like a 6-year-old drew it. Way to be developmentally appropriate, Buddy.
He can Mona Lisa the fuck out of an Etch-a-Sketch, but he can't handle a crayon.
He can't handle a crayon. Just like all falls apart once there's crayons involved.
It's all about the medium.
I know. He has a special affinity for the Etch-a-Sketch. Even though he doesn't like to build them, he certainly likes to play with them. So, dear old Dad unfolds the tissue paper in the box to reveal the red broad baby doll lingerie Teddy, aka Teddy, that Gimbel's department store rightfully said was for someone special. Hmm. Dear old Dad is puzzled, but what the fuck? But his what the fuck train of thought is interrupted when his assistant lets him know the police are on the line. Yay! And now we find out what happened with Buddy and the fake Santa brawl. Buddy got arrested. Real Santa should have done him a favor and given him the fourth and most important tip about going out into the real world. There are lots of Santa's helpers out there. They say they're Santa, and their job is to spread Christmas cheer and make sure I have time to prepare for Christmas at the North Pole by helping me out in other locations.
You did him dirty, Santa. You did him dirty.
Seriously, but Santa did not tell him that. No. Buddy mentions the gum, which Buddy promptly ignored. So, dear old Dad does pick up Buddy from the police station, and Buddy is beside himself. "They all said you weren't going to pick me up, but I told them they were wrong. Hey, Officer Simpson, look, it's my dad." Dear old Dad.
I was honestly very surprised that he picked him up, too.
I know.
Walter, being the person that he is on the naughty list, would probably be like, "Great, don't have to deal with him for 3 to 6 months until his trial."
He's like, "Plus, I get a try on this nice little Teddy. See how it looks."
How did he know?
He's into showing off his, like, little lingerie sexy side. And I think he would do a great musical number in that outfit for his wife. I'm just saying.
Baby, it's cold outside.
Dear old Dad pulls Buddy to the side and wants to know how Buddy got that photo of him and Susan. That's why he came. He was curious. And it wasn't the lingerie after all.
Aw, shucks.
I know.
Buddy tells him, Papa Elf gave it to me. Dear old Dad has had enough of, and yoinks Buddy straight to the pediatrician for a DNA test. Yes, let's take a 30-year-old man to the pediatrician. Makes sense.
Right?
Mm-hmm. During all of this, Buddy is acting, well, kind of like a child, even though he's 30-something and very much a man. But his naivete from living in the land of the elves is strong. Like, very, very strong.
Mm-hmm.
His DNA test comes back and he's 100% that bitch. It reveals Buddy is dear old Dad's son, and the pediatrician recommends to him, and he's played by Jon Favreau, yay, that if he just gives Buddy a little love, Buddy will stop acting like a delusional childlike elf and start acting like the grown-up man he is. How much money do you want to put on that hypothesis?
None at all. Next, we see Walter explaining the situation to his current wife, smoking hot Emily, as they go up the elevator in their luxury high-rise apartment. She's thrilled until he tries explaining that Buddy believes he's a legitimate elf from Santa's workshop. She doesn't believe him until she opens their front door, and it's decorated also much like Gimbel's, like a winter wonderland, which, to be clear, is not how they left it. And if that doesn't solidify it, Buddy at the dinner table regales his new family that he traveled past the candy cane forest, through the swirly-twirly gumdrop waters, and then walked through the Lincoln Tunnel. He then chugs a 2-liter of soda out of the bottle and asks for syrup when the family's eating spaghetti. Emily's a little flustered that she didn't put any out because, you know, they're having spaghetti. So Buddy produces his own stash from his elf sleeve. He loves syrup. It's the elf way. Their 4 food groups are candy, candy canes, candy corns, and syrup. He pours a generous glob onto his dinner and dives in. Emily asks how long he plans on staying because he's more than welcome and she's obviously the heart of this family. Buddy says he thought maybe forever, which causes Papa Walter to ask Emily into the next room for a chat. She is adamant that Buddy stays. He obviously has issues he needs to deal with, and he is their family. Meanwhile, Michael, their son, who's about, how old would you say he is?
He's 12.
Michael, their son, who's about 12, and Buddy are still in the dining room, and Buddy lets out an award-winning Everyone who heard it would be impressed, but Michael just calls him weird and tries to ignore him the rest of the evening. None of this dampers Buddy's good nature, and the next morning he makes the family breakfast, which is more spaghetti, but a la Buddy, which means noodles drenched in syrup.
With tomato sauce on top as well.
With tomato sauce on top as well.
Yay!
That sounds gross.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Emily gets up first and is touched when he went through the trouble until she sees what he prepared. She's a good sport and takes a healthy forkful while proclaiming how good it is through semi-clenched teeth. She asks how he slept, and Buddy enthusiastically replies, "Great, I got a full 40 minutes and had enough time to build a rocking horse." He motions over to a vintage rocking horse made out of wood, and Emily asks where he got the wood from. Cut to a center table in the living room that is completely dismantled and gutted. But she doesn't see that because Walter comes in. Buddy gives Emily lunch as she walks out, which is more spaghetti in a gallon-sized Ziploc bag. He then tries to make his dad a plate, but he declines, saying he'll just stick to coffee. While he's drinking it, Buddy produces an Etch-a-Sketch and reads all the wonderful things he wants to do with his dad that day, like make snow angels, eat a whole roll of cookie dough, and snuggle!
Yay!
But Walter informs him that he has to work, and they can't do any of it. Buddy sadly shakes the Etch-a-Sketch clean, while his father adds, "You know what would really make me happy is if you'd lose the elf costume. You're not in the North Pole, after all." Buddy, eager to please, pulls down his tights just as Emily rounds the corner because she forgot something, and they both scream because he just flashed his stepmom.
Yeah, that was great timing when dear old dad was like, "Lose the tights," and he's like, "Okay, ta-da!"
Just so ready to impress his dad. This will get you to like me, and the lingerie sure as hell wasn't working. Maybe this will.
He's like, "Where was the musical number with the lingerie? I was waiting for it."
Yeah.
Santa baby, hurry down the chimney tonight. All right.
Oh, God. I got a visual now.
Of James Caan.
James Caan.
Singing Santa baby. Sexy. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. He plays a great straight guy across from Will Ferrell.
James Caan blew me away in this movie. I was so surprised that he was in this movie, and he plays the crusty characters that he plays in the dramas, and he's playing it in this movie instead. And I was like, James Caan, I want to know your motivations for choosing this role. So curious.
I believe since I saw that, the movies that made us, he wasn't the first choice. Either he wasn't the first choice, or Jon Favreau, who directed this, really was a James Caan fan and wanted him in the role. But they said throughout the movie, Will Ferrell is like improvisational wonder, and he likes like ad-libbing lines and just like flying off the cuff.
Yeah.
And that is not at all what James Caan does. Yeah. And so in some of the instances when he's super annoyed, it's actually real because he's like, well, you just fucking say the line you're supposed to say and stop fucking around.
And see, that's what I was thinking. I was like, he is not a fit for this movie, but he is perfect to play dear old dad, who is horrible person. And I'm not saying James Caan is a horrible person, but he is not a person who wants to fuck around with Will Ferrell being, you know, an infantile ass. Like,
an endearing, hilarious infantile ass. If you ask me.
Yeah, yeah. You have a soft spot for Will Ferrell and his antics.
I do.
Yeah.
Not so much later on in his career. It started getting a little bit wonky, and I was like, oh, why did you have to do Anchorman 2? Why?
He's jumping
the first
shark.
One was, oh, God. Yeah. Anyways, Buddy gets left at home while everybody goes about their day. He calls his dad almost immediately because his number was on the emergency list that Emily left. Walter, exasperated, asks, is this an emergency? It is to Buddy. He heard a strange, scary noise coming from the box under the window. They deduce together that it was the radiator. Buddy's mind is eased, and he tells his dad he'll call him back in 5 minutes while concocting his own breakfast, which is his special spaghetti. But in addition to syrup, it's also covered in mini marshmallows and M&Ms. Walter asks him not to call again and hangs up as Buddy takes a huge bite of his dish and mms. Then notices a box of chocolate Pop-Tarts, peels a package open, and crumbles them onto his already disgusting concoction. Mashes it up with his hands and begins eating it sans fork.
Will Ferrell commits to that shit. He just shoves it into his mouth and chews, and I am like,
To be fair, I don't think he had tomato sauce on his.
No.
I don't see tomato sauce. No. And maybe it's a little more palatable without the
Yeah, because it's just a lot acidity. Of sweet on top of a starch. Yeah, that should be.
Yeah, exactly. I would take that over the chewed gum any day of the week.
Yes! Note to self, treat Tamara to special spaghetti the next time she comes for a visit. Got it.
Did not say I wanted it. I said if there was a gun to my head.
Oh!
And somebody said you could either chew a bunch of already chewed gum that you find under a subway railing or the spaghetti with chocolate Pop-Tarts, M&M syrup, and marshmallows on it, I would probably go for the spaghetti.
I know I'm going to
a la Buddy.
I know I'm going to lose some gentle listeners with this confession, but you know, 6-year-old me would have died and gone to heaven just like Buddy with the Subway gum.
I've been known to scrape gum off the grocery store floor and eat it
as a child. Not as an adult.
Yeah, no, this was last week. It was like,
you said it as if it were like great. I've been known to do this. And I'm like, not recently, right?
I was toddler age, and I don't remember. All I remember is the look on my mom's face when she was like, no, because she was checking out at the grocery store. They were bagging her groceries. She was trying to pay, and I totaled off I toddled off and saw some gum on the floor, which I recall to be very dark, as dark, like has been stepped on quite a bit, but was like, this is gum. I know what this is. And it took me a while to scrape it up. So I was there for a while before she noticed me. And then it was already in my mouth. And that is why I never get sick, because I have ingested all of the germs in the universe on the grocery store floor in that piece of already been chewed up gum.
I'm so thankful for your resilient immune system. Thanks, grocery gum. Ding!
The more you know.
Now, as ODK listeners, you can get in on this special of grocery store gum to boost your immune system.
This gum has not actually been proven to boost your immune system.
But it's been chewed by Tamra, who has all the germs in her body. So, it, of course, it magically protects you all if you chew my already been chewed gum. That's right. ODK is introducing ABC gum for your ABC immune enjoyment.
Nice. Just another one of our valuable products.
Mm-hmm. Adding it to the list. Anyways, a short while later, Walter's boss pays him a visit in his office and chews him out for his lack of attention and poor judgment on sending an incomplete story to print, a la the beginning of our outline. His boss tells him that the error has cost them a huge dip in sales, and now Walter has to brainstorm another book idea to launch so they can end the quarter in a positive. He demands they have the idea hashed out by Christmas Eve, and Walter at first wants to object, but instead accepts his fate. Well, damn it. They're going to have another meeting on Christmas Eve, so holidays be damned.
Yay! Later that day. I know. Woohoo! Nothing says holidays like meetings. Mm-hmm. Later that day, Michael gets out of school. He's talking to a couple of friends when suddenly he hears, Michael! Hey, Michael! It's me, Buddy! Your brother! Michael walks rapidly away, embarrassed, but Buddy continues, Michael! Michael! Buddy rushes after him, narrowly missing getting hit by oncoming traffic. And as Michael walks, Buddy rambles on and on and on and on, enthusiastically talking about things like seeing a dog. Michael yells at him, leave me alone, when suddenly, out of the corner of his eye, something flies at them with Seth. With I kept this in because it was your typo and I just thought it was funny, and then I just read it straight on accident with Seth defying speed, not death defying, gentle listeners, Seth defying.
I didn't even realize I did that. I'm like, why did she put Seth defying speed? Oh wait, that was me.
Yeah. Shit. Was it a UFO that flew at Michael and Buddy? Nah.
Buddy, was it a guy named Seth?
Is it Santa's sack?
Santa's illegitimate cousin, Seth.
No, Buddy is pelted with a snowball. Womp, 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 womp. Sorry, nothing as exciting as we mentioned before, snowball.
Damn it.
I know. Buddy and Michael both take cover, and I do believe they are in Central Park. And Michael knows they're attackers. They're bad news. And Buddy assures his bro, we can take them. Buddy instructs Michael to make a bunch of snowballs. Michael makes one. Buddy makes 50 plus. And then becomes a human snowball Gatling gun, pummeling the several surrounding kids with snowballs. Michael is wowed as he sees the snowball bullies flee. And with that, Buddy has won Michael's heart, and they hang out in New York City, goofing around together. Buddy tells Michael how lucky he is to have a dad, with Michael clarifying that, no, my dad sucks. And the both of them return to Gimbel's, where Buddy dreamily stares at Jovi. Michael assesses the situation. Do you like her? Buddy admits that he does, so Michael advises him, ask her out on a date to eat some food, real food that isn't candy. If she says yes, that means she's interested. Jovi spots them and walks over. Hey, what are you doing here? Did Gimbel's give you your job back? Buddy smiles gleefully at her. No, something better. They gave me a restraining order. Yay. Jovi looks surprised. You should probably leave then, Buddy confesses. But I wanted to see you. You make me feel all warm inside. My tongue swells. And I was wondering, do you want to eat food? Jovi is puzzled. Food? And by the way, while this conversation is going on, Wanda, a large black man who has the perfect Santa bod, is taken over Santa duties. But he is not, I would say, regaled with the hair that he should be wearing for said duties.
No, he is bald.
Yeah.
And does not have a beard.
Yeah. Which makes him somewhat of an incomplete Santa. If he was wearing the beard, though, he would spot on.
Mm-hmm.
But he's eyeing Buddy like, you fucking, I got security on my walkie. Buddy smiles at Jovi. You know, food. And he winks. Not creepy at all.
Winky, winky.
I know. Jovi responds, I just had my lunch break. And Buddy's face falls. But then she counters, I'm free on Thursday. And Buddy is joyous. Thursday, Thursday. Michael takes that as a win and pulls Buddy away, waving goodbye, ushering Buddy out before he can screw it the fuck up.
Michael's a great wingman.
I know. Michael is wise beyond his years. Back at home, I mean, that was sound advice that he gave him, and actually pretty logical follow through. I mean, it is true a woman might say yes to a date when she doesn't. She's not actually interested, but it was still like, it was pretty solid, I would say, for a 12-year-old. Back at home, Buddy and Michael have dragged a Christmas tree into the apartment. And it's huge. Like, a foot of the top of the tree is bent across the ceiling huge. Dear old Dad comes home, and he's not happy. He talks to his wife, Emily, in their room. But she doesn't care that it's a felony that Buddy chopped the tree down from a public park. For the first time in years, their son, Michael, has a happy affect, and she's here for it. Dear old Dad grudgingly agrees not to kick out Buddy, but says he can't stay here unsupervised. Who knows what kind of trouble he'll get into? As dear old Dad rips a paper chain from their buddy-fied / Christmas-fied / winter-fied / whimsified room. He went ham on that whole apartment. Like, not just the main living space. He's like, the bathroom. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a tree in the tub. Like,
yeah,
there's just paper garlands and snowflakes and cotton everywhere. Huh, dear old Dad says, Emily, you'll stay here with him tomorrow and take the day off work. Emily raises an eyebrow. No, I've got a budget meeting. Dad rebuts. I'm one bad decision away from being fired. I can't take a day off of work. Emily states, okay, well, if you want him to be supervised, I guess you'll just have to take him to work with you. Meanwhile, Buddy is in the next room using the couch to vault into the tree in hopes of getting the star on top of the Christmas tree. He fails miserably, ends up hugging onto the tree and toppling it over. But I guess they have access to the top of the tree then, so there's that. The next day, dear old Dad shows up to work with Buddy. Buddy's not looking like an elf, but like a taller mirror image of his dad in a suit that didn't read 2000 something. It read more like 80s, but you know.
And camel colored coats, which I am here for.
Yes. ODK will be coming out with our very own line of Tamara camel colored coats. But my name will not be associated with it because
ew. What? We'll do Corinne face lining inside the coat, so it'll be like you and me at the same time. You're like the little delightful surprise inside.
Oh, and it can be reversible, so it could just be like
yeah. She's making a very scary face. Yes, yes, it could.
An enthusiastic smiling face.
Ah, oh, I'm sorry. She's making a very enthusiastic smiling face.
It's when you want it to be red for winter for Christmas time.
Ding, ding, okay.
Ding, 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 because of my face.
Yes, you do get flushed easily. Yes.
Yeah. As my mom so graciously says, I can always see you when you're singing in the choir because your face is so red. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, my God. Oh, Barbara.
Yeah, that's dear old Mom. So Buddy compliments everyone he encounters as he walks behind his dad, and they get into his office where Buddy ends up sitting on a stuffed pig in the corner. How do you think that came about? Oh, wisdom of elf, Tamara.
Because it's a children's publishing book company, so maybe they have, like, the occasional child come in to give feedback on their offerings, and so maybe that's why the pig chair's in Walter's office.
I was like, would he actually tolerate Buddy sitting in the corner on a tiny stuffed pink pig?
Well, he doesn't for long.
True. Buddy, he is not one to be contained with reading a children's book and sitting on a stuffed pig in the corner, as Tamara foreshadowed. He springs up when his dad's phone rings, excitedly answering it. Buddy the Elf, what's your favorite color? The person hangs up and dear old dad has had it. So he pitches Buddy on something new and exciting. Have you ever been to the mailroom? Buddy shakes his head and dear old dad pitches the mailroom hard. It's a place where mail from all over the world comes, and you can touch it all, and there are shiny metal bins that mail goes into. Buddy's eyes widen in wonder. He wants to go there, and go there he does, but as he's being shown around by the mailroom guy, Buddy scopes out the room. This is nothing like Dad described it. It's a gray basement-y space with neon lights. Neon. Is it? Fluorescent. Fluorescent lights hanging from the ceiling. Yeah. They call it the basement.
This basement has everything.
So the basement has a bunch of tough looking guys that I'm pretty sure were in the prison scene with Buddy earlier in the movie. And there is nothing lively or sparkly about the space other than the beautiful wonder of vacuum tubes. However, I'm like, vacuum tubes are divine. Are you kidding? The sound alone, the fact that this tube goes and it just like amazing. I am surprised.
I would fuck around a lot with that vacuum tube.
I am surprised that he wasn't like, let's see what goes up the vacuum tube. However, I have no doubt that Buddy could sparkle magic that place up. Buddy could sparkle magic up any place. Buddy states sadly, this is a lot like Santa's workshop, except it smells like mushrooms instead of gingerbread and cedar shavings. And everyone here looks like they want to hurt me. Oh, Buddy, where do you belong? Where do you belong, Buddy?
Oh, somebody's got to vacuum tube him back up to his dad's office.
Not yet a human.
She can't help herself. She's singing again.
Come on, kid. That was a brilliant one.
Oh, man. I don't know. I was kind of a fan of Get Out of the Elevator.
Yeah, that one was really good, too. I think those two are, like, parallel with each other. Like,
neck and neck. I think people gotta weigh in on this. Oh, the competitiveness in me. I am so sorry. I give you props on that. Oh, beautiful. Meanwhile, upstairs, Walter is trying to save his job. He has a meeting with his top two writers, who pitch that they bring in Mild Finch, the golden goose.
I love that they're like, why would I want to write something when somebody else can write it instead?
Yes. And that's Walter's sentiment exactly, as he frowns and clarifies. My two top writers, my fun squad, want to bring in another writer? His face sours a bit before he proclaims, I like it. Meanwhile, back downstairs, Buddy meets his mailroom neighbor, a rough-looking guy whose expression reads that he'd rather be anywhere else than in that shitty mailroom. He grabs a small bottle of liquor from his pocket and pours it into his coffee cup. Buddy, thinking it's syrup, asks if he can have some. Why didn't he think of that? Putting syrup in coffee, and empties the bottle into his own mug and snuggles up before taking a sip. A short while later, we see the two lounging across Full Metal bins, laying down with their hands behind their head, completely schnockered. Buddy proclaims that they're best friends now, because after a first drink, you either get really sick or everyone becomes your best friend. And he went with the latter. Back upstairs, Walter and his crack team have gotten Finch on the phone. They're speaking via speaker, and he agrees to meet with them the next day. But he's a bit of a diva and will only agree to the meeting if a certain car comes to pick him up and the interior is exactly 71 degrees. No more, no less. Walter and his riders agree. They're thrilled. Their asses are saved. Until Deb comes on the phone and informs them, Walter, there's an emergency downstairs in the mailroom. Walter snarls at her to hang up. And Finch on the other line hears this and demands, do not put me on hold. Nobody puts me on hold. Deb pleads again that he call the mailroom. While Walter repeats his command to Deb to hang up and get off the line, which has now fallen silent. And everyone thinks Finch has flown the coop, but after a few seconds, he says, I'll be there tomorrow. 71 degrees.
So when Buddy and the other guy are like lounging on the mail carts, talking with each other, the guy says that he's 26. And I was like, if by 26 you mean 46.
He's lived a hard life, see? That's what happens when you live hard and get put away wet.
Get put away wet? Oh, that's exciting.
Well, they say driven hard and put away wet.
Is that
well,
a
maybe
sex
that's an expression
reference?
I probably completely botched it. No. It's like, I don't fucking know. I'm so like, wow. Corinne is thrusting her bosoms up.
I thrust my hand. My bosoms just happened to be on my body.
All that thrusting, though, they must follow the thrust. They must follow the thrust. All I'm saying is that guy who was in a work release program was probably 26, but he just looked like he was 46 because he lived a hard life and it all showed on his face. Walter finally gets off the phone, calls the mailroom, and talks to Sam, the mailroom supervisor, and demands to know what the hell is so important that I had to get off the phone. And we cut to the mailroom, and a full-on drunk Buddy, who has taken over a table, is enthusiastically river dancing on top of it to the tune of whoop, there it is, whoop, there it is. And all his colleagues cheer him on and clap. It's a madhouse. Walter hears the fuss, hangs up the phone, and that's it. Nothing else is said or done about it. Must have been a part that was cut there because next we see Buddy in front of Jovi's house for their date. When she comes downstairs, he says she looks miraculous. And she asks what he had in mind for their date. He has ideas. Lots and lots of ideas. First, they go to Dave's Diner where he blindfolds her and has her sample the world's best cup of coffee, which it's not. It's actually a terrible cup of coffee, but Buddy believes that it's the best because that's what the sign outside says. So it must be true. Then he shows her how to run around in a revolving door and encourages her to jump in, double dutch style. She seems charmed by his childlike enthusiasm, especially when he skips down the street to show her a huge, beautifully decorated Christmas tree in a store window. She looks at him and at it and smirks to herself before grabbing his sleeve and saying, "Come with me." Where do they go? Why, she takes him to the mother of all Christmas trees, the Big Mama Jamma in front of Rockefeller Center. And he has been outdone by her. This is by far the biggest and best Christmas tree in the city. They gaze at it for a few minutes and then take to ice skating underneath it. They go around a few times before Buddy leans over and kisses Jovi on the cheek. She turns to face him and he apologizes, but she informs him very matter-of-factly that he missed. He doesn't know what she means until she grabs his collar and plants a big kiss right on his lips. This emboldens him and he goes in for a bigger kiss and we fade to black. And I secretly wish a lot of Hallmark kisses went like this. If the guy lingers or there's a kisses interruptus, that the girl would just grab his collar and just plant one on his lips and be like, fuck you, I'm kissing you anyways.
And can we take a moment to talk about their date
And I think it's so funny because Zooey Deschanel so often plays kind of like the manic pixie dream girl. And
yeah.
I look at the scene and I'm like, oh my God, I would do a lot of these things that Buddy is doing, but it would be charming because I'm a girl doing it. And, but Buddy doing it is just like.
And an elf.
And an elf is just like. Juvenile or whatever. And I was like, Zooey Deschanel is going out with the male version of the manic pixie dream girl right there with Buddy the Elf.
The next day, Miles Finch arrives to his meeting at Walter's office. Almost everyone recognizes him because he's pretty remarkable. He's a dwarf. I was trying to see if that was a PC term for it, and I couldn't figure out, but I think it's okay. If it's not, I apologize. He enters the publishing conference room and gets straight down to business. Once he procures payment for Malter via a white unmarked envelope in very hush-hush terms, he hears the other writers' pitches. They start with one story, which includes a small tomato. But Finch shakes his head and thinks, nope, veggies are too vulnerable and everyone's pushing small-town rural. The next writer pitches, how about an asparagus kid who's self-conscious about the smell of their pee? Walter is livid that all his bang-up writers have are stories about vegetables. But Miles is undeterred. He has some killer ideas, better than theirs, that he's really fucking jazzed about, all in this little notebook that he carries around with him. He's about to share it with them when Buddy bursts into the meeting proclaiming, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love! Walter pleads with him to go back down to the pit, which is, I guess, his name for the mailroom, and he'll come see him later. But Buddy realizes the other people in the office, namely Finch, and says, I didn't know you had elves in here. Finch is offended and tells him, ha ha, very funny. Walter smooths it over and explains that Buddy has problems and keep talking, tell us what that pitch is. Finch seems to let it go and goes back to his story before Buddy insists, does Santa know you're here? Did you steal a sleigh to get over here? This incenses Finch even more, who says, hey, Buddy, we're all laughing here, but I get more action in a week than you've gotten in your whole life. And I've got houses in L.A., Paris, and Vail. Each one of them has a 70-inch plasma screen TV, so I suggest you wipe that stupid smile off your face before I come smack it off. You feeling strong, my friend? Call me Elf one more time. I just said that because I'm like, wow, 70-inch plasma screen TVs. That didn't age well.
Yeah, well, oh, but Peter Dinklage, man, he is a legend. God.
Oh, yes, the Finch character is played by Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I didn't say that. And he is epic in this role.
Oh, there was, I mean, I was correcting. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, psh.
Just kidding.
You're not an elf anymore. You're not an elf.
No. But yeah, like, he is one of my favorite actors of all time.
I know. I watched an interview with him when he was doing Game of Thrones, and he's like, yeah, I've pretty much been a working actor my whole life. I've never had to really look for roles. They came looking for me. And I was like, and it's well deserved, my friend.
Oh, he is so good. He is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, if he was ever like, I'm ditching my wife, I am single, I'd be like, I'd tap that.
All over it.
Yeah.
Hello, Peter.
I will Peter your Dinklage, sir.
Seriously. Oh, he's a cutie.
And see where y'all do. You feeling strong, my friend? Call me Elf one more time. Buddy pauses for a beat before saying, he's an angry elf, which causes Finch to jump on the table, run over to Buddy, and drop kick him in the chest. He proceeds to beat the shit out of him, his size not seeming to be an issue, before he takes Buddy into a headlock and warns him, call me Elf again! Call me Elf again! Buddy, in spite of the chokehold, squeaks, you're an elf! Finch drops him, beelines straight to his chair, grabs his jacket, while Walter begs for him to stay, but it's no use. He is out. Meeting adjourned. Buddy, not realizing what just happened, rubs his neck and proclaims, he must be a South Pole elf. Now it's Walter's turn to bring the pain. He looks at Buddy and tells him, get the hell out of my office. I don't ever want to see you again. I don't care if you are my son or batshit crazy. Oof. I just want you gone. Buddy rushes out of the conference room near tears, while all Walter's colleagues look on mortified at the shit show that just transpired.
Can we talk about, this is another one of those fucking moments. This is like in The Family Stone with Sarah Jessica Parker. This is like in Holiday in Harlem, where in The Family Stone did not happen, in Holiday Harlem did happen. There should be some yoinking going on, because, like, why is he fucking persisting in this moment, calling him an elf when the guy is clearly saying, don't call me an elf? Like, that's, like, the shitty thing to do.
Doesn't know any better.
Oof.
Oh. It's the childlike innocence in him that thinks he just doesn't realize he's an elf because that's all I've known. And what an exciting time to see somebody that he recognizes as his fam and friends that he grew up with, only to be like, no, I'm different. I may look the same, but I'm completely, totally different. I'm much hotter than the other elves, by the way.
Oh, much hotter. And also can flip 6'3" buddy onto the conference room table.
Yes. Yes, he can.
Meow. After my heart has been broken by a very awkward and weird scene, dear old dad still has a pitch to do. But first, he has to field a phone call with Emily, his wife. She's not happy that he hasn't done the pitch yet, and is even unhappier that he won't be coming home for a while as it's Christmas Eve. But she'd be even pisteder if she knew that he kicked out Buddy.
Pisteder.
Yes. Like, you know, she was pissed and she was even more pissed, but she would be even pisteder if she knew that he kicked out Buddy.
Yeah.
Oof. Dear old dad has at least one thing going for him. The fact that Finch left his book of ideas behind when he stormed off. So I guess they can steal his work. Yay.
I mean, he did pay for it.
Yes.
So
his bang-up writer's team gets to work storyboarding out the pitch. And meanwhile, back at his family's apartment, Buddy is writing a goodbye/apology letter on an Etch-a-Sketch, as one does.
That's great, because if he used crayons, nobody would be able to read it.
And it's a good thing it's not in California, because if there was an earthquake, then his message would be ruined. Because it's not the most stable of writing services. But Buddy is Buddy, after all. He states in the Etch-a-Sketch letter, I'm sorry I ruined your lives and crammed 11 cookies into the VCR. I don't belong here. I know. I was like, how many people know what a VCR is anymore? Just asking for a friend. He says, I don't belong here anymore. I don't belong here. I don't belong anywhere. I'll never forget you. Love, Buddy. Setting his New York City snow globe on top of the Etch-a-Sketch, Buddy leaves. Later, Michael comes home and finds Buddy's message. He rushes to his dad's office, where dear old dad has just started his pitch. Michael bursts into the room, distressed. Buddy left us a note, and now he's gone. We need to find him. Dad tries to put him off, but Michael is pissed. Buddy cares about everyone, but all you care about is yourself. Dad tells him to hold on. He just needs to do this pitch. And his boss man tells him that he needs to pitch right now or he'll lose his job. Dear old dad is torn about what to do until the boss man says to Michael, son, you'll have to wait. Ooh, no one tells his kid what to do except for him. He basically tells his boss to fuck off and heads out with his son. And I say, why couldn't you turn to your very capable assistant, Deb, and ask her to do the pitch? I'm sure she's just as capable of pitching as he is, and she sat through dozens of them. It's like, people act like executives are like, have this magical power that like regular people don't have. And I'm like, no, the regular people also have the same magical powers that the executive people have.
Counterpoint, though, at the very beginning of the movie, when we first see Deb, she is on the phone with a friend who is asking her to take on like 20 cats, and she agrees. So, I'm saying anybody that agrees to take 20 cats and be fine with it might not be all.
That's a children's book right there.
And it's called A Whole Lot of Pussy.
Deb and a Whole Lot of Pussy.
That's so funny. When you said that VCR remark, it reminded me of a, I think, Bored Panda article or something that I saw where somebody bought an older car, a millennial or younger bought a really old car, took it for a drive and thought that the cassette tape deck was a phone charger.
Oh, no.
And, like, shoved their cell phone in there, which miraculously it fit, but it was scratching up the screen, and they kept, like, posting it on Reddit or something. We're like, does anybody know how this phone charger works? All it's doing is scratching up my screen. Oh, honey. See, there was a time before cell phones existed. Let me take you back to the 80s.
You know how you have playlists? We had mixtapes that were recorded off the radio. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was so excited when I had the double tape deck so I could record from one to the other directly. So good.
Oh, I was so excited when my song would come on the radio and I'm like, I gotta record it, and press record, and then you hear it, and then the fucking DJ would talk over the end of it, and you're like, motherfucker, will you please shut up? And that was Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer. No, Bon Jovi's still living on that prayer. Can you please give him a few more seconds?
Or when they're talking over the beginning and you're like,
shush,
you're ruining the beginning.
Shush. You try to, but you can still like time it. You can still like, okay, still talking. Stop. Press record.
Whoa, halfway there. So Daryl Dad fucks off his job on Christmas Eve and goes to find Buddy searching with his son Michael. But apparently screaming someone's name while walking down the street isn't super effective. Thank you, Tamara, for that line. Meanwhile, Buddy is at a bridge.
I would say just in New York. Like, if they were in the Family Stone in small town USA, maybe that'd work. But New York just seems like it wouldn't be just yielding many results.
If they were in the town that I was in this weekend where I sent you the pictures and I was like, I'm in Hallmark Town. And I totally agree with you. So Buddy is at a bridge pouring his heart out over some body of water, saying many soulful things that are all of the essence of, I don't belong anywhere. Same, Buddy. Heart same. Anyhow, enough of me and my square pig life. Buddy.
Okay. That got deep real fast.
I know. I'm like, we're getting dark here. And we're turning around. So Buddy sees Santa up in the sky, having a hard time staying airborne. And crashing nearby on a neighboring street, Michael also sees something falling from the sky and pulls his dad away from the city streets into Central Park to take a look. Buddy races to the scene. Santa has been grounded in Central Park and almost shanks Buddy, growling at him to stay away from the reindeer. But when Santa realizes it's Buddy, he's thrilled. His sleigh lost power and he needs an elf's help. Buddy explains, I'm not an elf. And Santa tells him, you're more of an elf than any elf I know, and the only one I would want to help fix my sleigh. But he does admit that Papa Elf taught him how to fix the sleigh, and Santa is psyched. He tells Buddy, I'll stay with the sleigh, and you find the engine that dropped off of it. Next, we see Jovi eating ramen. I love ramen. Watching the news. They are reporting on Santa's sleigh crashing into Central Park. Then they cut to a breaking story of an elf being sighted there too. A Sasquatch-style video clip of Buddy is played. Jovi recognizes him because Buddy the elf is very recognizable. And I was like, nicely played with the Sasquatch-style video. Good reference. Because I watched it and I was like, that's a Sasquatch-style video. And then I looked in your notes and it was like, Sasquatch-style video. And I was like, yes, wisdom of the ages. Back in Central Park, Michael and Walter have found the booster for Santa's sleigh. And then Buddy finds them. They have a sweet reunion where Walter says, I don't care if you're chemically imbalanced. I still want you in my life. You're my son and I love you. Buddy's thrilled and shows them Santa's sleigh. We go back to the newscaster who is milking this holiday story in Central Park. Charlotte, the newscaster, gets hit on by a guy she's interviewing and then reports that the questionable Central Park police force are being called out. You don't even want to know what happened between them and the Simon and Garfunkel concert in 85. Secrets.
Wow, you know those Simon and Garfunkel fans, they get rowdy. Woo! They get real rowdy.
And in 85, too, I mean, this was like, to have been a reunion tour. And so
high tension and high hair.
Yeah. It's not like it was like, oh, we're in our prime and it's the, and everybody's just doing a crap ton of drugs while they're listening to us sing Bridge Over Troubled Waters.
No, it's a bunch of retirees.
Mm-hmm.
Buddy takes the booster back to Santa in an effort to fix the sleigh. Walter and Michael are awestruck by the encounter because Santa's real. And Walter finally realizes that his son's not crazy after all. He's actually one of Santa's elves. I think we overlapped that part, but it gets kind of mucky here in this last bit with a lot of back and forth. Buddy gets busy trying to reattach the turbine back onto the turbine. Great job, Tamara. Back onto the sleigh. While Santa asks Michael what he wants for Christmas, he says cautiously, a skateboard. As Santa breaks into a huge grin, not just any skateboard, an authentic huffboard. He pulls out his nice list, which is actually a big phone book sized book.
It's like a giant unabridged dictionary.
Yes, thank you. A book the size of an unabridged dictionary. Thank you, Corinne. Scrolls to find Michael Hopp's name and points to where he's listed. Michael gasps as he reaches into Santa's bag and finds the exact skateboard he asked for. He's a believer now, and Santa's sleigh jumps ever so slightly. Santa explains that he needs the Kringle 3000 now because not enough people believe in him. Back in the day, his sleigh was powered solely by belief, but that has slowly dwindled over the years. Michael offers that they should just get the news reporter in there, and once Santa's on camera, everyone will believe.
Yeah.
But St. Nick shakes his head. That's not how believing works. And besides, I hate the paparazzi. Off in the distance, a horde of dark figures on horseback are charging through Central Park. Santa knows it's the Central Park police, and they gotta move fast. Buddy has an idea for a diversion. He grabs his dad, puts him in Santa's coat and hat, and they try to lure the park police away from the sleigh. But they're not fooled. Michael has his own idea. He grabs Santa's nice list / unabridged dictionary book and races to the edge of the park to the news reporter. On camera, he tells the city that Santa needs our help. Nobody believes him anymore, and his sleigh won't fly. He produces the nice list as proof. Across town, his mom sees the report and rushes out of the house to be with her son.
Aww.
The news reporter doesn't believe him, and he begins listing off kids and what they want for Christmas. All the children named watching the report are in awe because the list is spot on. Then Michael reads, Dirk Lawson also wants a day of pampering at the spa. A hefty bearded man in a biker bar is surrounded by tough-looking characters who all slowly turn towards him.
That's the 26-year-old that Buddy got drunk with.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's a different one.
No.
Is it the same one?
Mm-hmm.
It's a different one. No. I swear it's a different one.
Same.
Okay. Same. Agree to disagree.
All right. We're going to have to... I'm pulling out the camera, taking some pictures, do side by side.
Okay.
And
Surrounded by tough-looking characters who all slowly turn towards him. We don't know who he is, but his name is Dirk Lawson.
The guy that Buddy got drunk with in the mailroom.
That's not. He shrugs nervously and explains, must be a different Dirk Lawson. The news reporter is about to cut him off, but Michael's not done. He asks her what her name is, and when she tells him Charlotte Devon, he sifts through the D's and reads, Charlotte Devon wants a Tiffany engagement ring and for her boyfriend to stop dragging his feet. The crowd oohs and ahs in laughter, and Charlotte tells the cameraman to cut. Just then, Jovi arrives, and Michael explains that Santa's stuck in the park, and he's trying to help them, but the sleigh won't fly because nobody believes in him anymore. Then Michael's mom pops up. And while they reunite, Jovi reflects on something that Buddy said. The best way to spread Christmas cheer is to sing loud for all to hear.
Yay!
Back inside the park, Santa's attempting to fly away, or at least get away from the park police. He leaves Buddy behind, who is under the sleigh, fixing the turbine, and he just takes off without him. But Buddy manages to catch up and flings himself onto the back. Buddy asks Santa, why are they chasing us? And Santa explains that he put the park police on the naughty list a few years back, and they've never forgiven him.
Simon and
Joey outside the park.
They'll bring you down every time.
It's like a bridge over troubled water, goddammit. Joey outside the park stands up on a horse-drawn carriage, steals her nerves, and begins singing. You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Oh, she sings Santa Claus is coming to town in an attempt to get people to believe. And it's slow going at first, but Emily eventually joins in, and slowly and surely, so do the rest of the crowd.
Yay!
All the while, Santa's still bumping along the park grounds trying to get air. As the singing gets louder, his belief meter is going up, and he's slowly gaining altitude. But they aren't high enough when they pass over the Bethesda Fountain that we took pictures in front of on our New York trip.
And I did a really bad drawing of on our collaborative New York drawing.
Are you kidding? That drawing was awesome.
We'll post it on our Insta. Or we'll post it on our social media along with,
okay,
with other elf things, yes.
Well, you're going to have to because you have it. You have the sketchbook.
I'm going to send you a picture. Fear not, my friend. I'm just going to keep it for myself and look at it and be like, oh, geez, I wish Tam could see this.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, Santa's engine gets caught on the wing of the Bethesda Fountain and flies off. Buddy tells Santa as it crashes to the ground and Saint Nick yells, we're toast. But the newscaster Charlotte outside the park has turned on her cameras again. And at the growing number of gathered people singing, this prompts everyone who's watching this newscast across the city to start singing along. We see the Gimble staff and Wanda all singing. The employees at Walter's Publishing Company are singing. Santa Claus is coming to town. Even the lackeys downstairs in the mailroom are singing, which probably includes Buddy's best friend.
Who's at the biker bar.
Okay. Agree to disagree.
Can't wait for you to buy me that meal for me being right about this.
Did we make a bet? I don't recall making a bet. I don't remember.
It was implied.
Okay, sure. I will not gamble with you ever, ma'am, because you'll be like, remember that $250 you owe me for that implied bet that we made that I didn't mention, but I gave you all winky winky and I assumed you knew that's what it meant.
Look, winky winkies, you gotta know what they mean.
Okay.
Shh, secret.
Alrighty. The whole city joins in to sing the Christmas carol, but Santa is still bumping along. Michael realizes his dad, who's joined the outer Central Park crowd, is just mouthing the words. Michael tells his dad to sing, but Walter doesn't know the difference. If he lip syncs or sings, who cares? His son gives him the stink eye that says, really, Dad, after everything we've been through tonight? So Walter finally belts out, Santa Claus is coming to town. And the sleigh finally zooms into the sky. Santa is thrilled, just like old times. And Buddy looks down to see Jovi and Michael in the crowd below and waves goodbye. Is he going back to the North Pole? Nope. Because we see him back at the Hobbs house. Jovi's sitting next to Walter at the piano and they're both singing Auld Lang Syne, whatever the fuck that New Year's Eve song is. Thank you. She's not afraid to sing in public anymore, thanks to Buddy. Buddy's, meanwhile, opening presents, and his first package is from either Emily or Santa. We're not sure, but we do know it's a huge jug of syrup, and he is thrilled. Papa Elf is back, and his voice informs us of where the family is now. Walter started his own publishing company, and his first book was called Elf, a children's book based on Buddy's life. Buddy and Jovi, meanwhile, had a baby and every so often take it up to see Papa Elf. We see them sitting around in the very beige room having some hot beverages. Papa Elf wants to see the baby, but Buddy, who's holding it, misreads the room and instead sits on Papa's lap himself with the baby on his lap, to the great detriment of Papa's groin. Oh, Buddy, at least it's a happy, if not heavy, for Papa Elf at least, ending. The end.
Yay!
Fuck. God damn, that whole last scene was a mouthful. Jesus Christ. Immensely enjoyed watching that movie. Did not enjoy retelling the last bit. But anyways, Corinne, what do you give Elf?
I give Elf 3 dry kisses. I'm not a Will Ferrell fan, so it misses me on that level. Like, and I think it's a sweet movie, but I also have some, like, real problems with how infantile he is. It just doesn't even make sense that he would be, like, that naive. The childlike wonder doesn't go that far for me.
Yeah.
But I definitely, like, enjoyed it. There were moments that I really liked. And the level of diversity was really pitiful in this movie. We did have, like, some little moments of Wanda, but that was it. And
we also had Peter Dinklage.
That's true. Although he was, like, a short person joke, which, meh. But, yes.
I still like the fact that he kicked ass at the end.
Yeah. No. Peter Dinklage was great. I loved James Caan in this movie as well, because I was like, I'm surprised that he's putting up with the shit. And as Tamara said, he was putting up with shit that he didn't want to be putting up with. I do think that Will Ferrell is a great actor, but I'm not into physical comedy. So, like, him going up the elevator, I'm just like, meh. About, you know, like, that kind of stuff I just don't think is funny. So
that's gold. That stuff is gold.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you can appreciate it.
No. I appreciate the hell out of
it. Three dry kisses. What about you, Tam? What'd you give this?
I never knew that you were not a physical comedy fan.
Nah.
I've known you for 40 some odd years and I never knew that.
Well, you know, how many like Three Stooges movies do I talk about, or, you know.
Oh, he is in leaps and bounds. No. Three Stooges.
No, I agree.
I love Will Ferrell, and I'm still like,
I didn't mean to compare Will Ferrell to the Three Stooges, by the way.
I was going to say blasphemy. Blasphemy.
I take it all back.
I'm going to give this movie, because it's one of my all-time favorites,
yeah,
4 dry kisses. Yay! I would give it a solid 5, but there are, after watching it and having to document it, I'm like, wait, there's some places where it just falls off and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Which I kind of excused before because of the entertainment value. But now I'm like, wait a second.
I thought you were going to give it 4.5. So.
No. 4 dry kisses.
Okay.
I'm going to give it 4. Like, I do love this movie. I love it during the holidays. It puts me in the festive holiday mood. I don't ever watch it outside of the Christmas season. Uh-huh. I think if it was a 4.5, 5 dry kiss movie, I would watch it. The holiday, I do watch outside of the holidays.
100%.
Yes, this one I do not. It's one that I bring out around December, and I watch, and I enjoy, and I laugh still at the points that I will probably always laugh at.
That's great.
But yeah, 4 dry kisses. Yeah, the diversity was meh, but there were some great, like, heavy hitting actors in here that do a really great job.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I love Will Ferrell's physical comedy. There is a part in the movie that I didn't mention because it didn't need to be mentioned, but when he was first coming into New York City and he was kind of like bounding through town with this childlike glee, he actually sees a very heavy-set bearded man in a red jogging suit.
Yeah.
Like, full-on white beard.
Oh, he's
like
totally
white
Santa.
Suspenders.
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
And, like, Will Ferrell chases after him. And he's all, Santa! And he taps him on the shoulder excitedly. And the guy turns around like, what the fuck do you want? And he goes, oh, you're not Santa. And yeah. He, like, scurries off. But that was actually improvised. Like, when they had Will Ferrell and they just, like, let him loose in New York City. And he saw that guy walking down the street. So that was actually just an innocent bystander and his real reaction. And I think that little parts of those are so delicious. But I wouldn't have even known about that unless I watched that Netflix, The Movies That Made Us show. So that show kind of made me enjoy those moments all the more, but still a solid 4 dry kiss movie for me.
Okay. Now my next question is, and I love that you love this movie and I enjoyed it, which is why it gets a 3 dry kiss instead of a less than that. But I think it's a solid movie. I totally agree. My next question though is, did you watch The Mistletoe Inn?
No, oh, God, no. I knew you were going to ask, and I hoped you forgot. I did not watch it. I'm not saying, oh, God, no, I didn't watch it because it's horrible. I didn't watch it because I forgot to. And then I was like, oh, shit, I was supposed to watch something. What was it again? I can't remember.
Well, gentle listeners will want to know next time what you think about the Mistletoe Inn, as will I.
Wait, we said that on...
We said it on our last episode.
Uh-huh, that I haven't gotten yet. So in my defense, I forgot the name of the movie. I couldn't refer to it because I don't have the rough recording yet.
You know, there is somebody who knows what the name of the movie is.
I also was just like, I don't want to tell her at 0 hour and 6:45 when we're recording at 8:30. Be like, what was the name of the movie real quick that I have to watch again?
Well, I look forward to hearing what you think about it when you do watch it. And, you know, if you have a movie challenge for me, I will be happy to accept it. So.
Well, I did until I realized you didn't like physical comedy. So I'm just not even going to share it with you.
Oh, now.
Yeah, it's the one I was going to recommend is full of physical comedy. And it just would be lost on you.
It would be. Step Brothers. Don't like.
Oh my God. There's so much room for activities now. How could you?
Hey, you know what? If you had me watch a Step Brothers type movie, I would totally watch a Step Brothers type movie. Like I said, the only thing that's off is horror.
The only thing off is horror?
No, the horror. The only movies that I will not watch if you suggest are horror movies because I'm a scaredy cat.
Yes. Gotcha. Okay. Noted.
What movie do we have coming up next week?
Three Wise Men and a Baby.
This is the current 2022 Hallmark hit, fresh, hot off the presses.
Hot off the Hallmark hunks?
Yes. Three Hallmark hunks. Ugh. Ty, Tyler Hines, Paul Campbell, and Andrew Walker, as well as it has some of the best ratings of a Hallmark movie of all time, because that trifecta is just mind-blowing. And there's an amazing dance scene in it. It's beautiful. Yes. The three guys do a ding, 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 ding.
Of course they do. Ding, 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 ding. Are you doing the YMCA dance?
I was being like a Christmas tree.
Oh, okay. I was like, they do Nutcracker to YMCA? That's good. I want to see how that fleshes out. Oh, no. That's an interesting scenario.
It's a beautiful piece of choreography. Someone gets spun around. I mean, there are lifts. It's gorgeous. So super excited to be talking about that bad boy. And if you have anything you'd like to say about Three Wise Men and a Baby, physical comedy, Elf, anything else, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us via social meets on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. What?
And that is one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, thank you for stopping by. And we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I would really like your 5-star rating. I just want your awesome reviews more than you could ever use. What more could you do? All I want for Christmas are 5-star rating and reviews.
Or a rating or two.
Yes.
A rating or two.
Well, if you used the ODK patented,
damn it, that is a hard word to say.
I know! You wouldn't be having this problem.